bringing you the latest research, tools, and common sense tips you need to get and stay healthy. It's Talk Healthy Today. Here's Lisa Davis.
My mother was not a fan of cooking. Now, that's an understatement. The woman did not like to use spices of any kind. I remember she used to make tacos, and we would thank God there was hot sauce because it was like flavorless. And I'm not trying to be mean to my mother. I'm just trying to be honest that it wasn't really an important thing to us. I mean, she would make healthy food, and she did the best she could. She had a lot of chronic health problems. So it was very difficult for her. So I never really learned how to cook until I got out on my own. And I really did take an interest in healthy cooking and healthy living. And there are still some things that I don't know how to do, or I don't know what they are. So thank goodness for Patricia Wells. You heard her beautiful laugh a moment ago. We're going to be talking about her latest book, My Master Recipes, 165 recipes to inspire confidence in the kitchen with dozens of variations. And we're going to be talking about it all. Hello, Patricia. So happy to get to talk to you again. Patricia, can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Oh, hello, dear. Patricia, I'm so excited to have you on. Because you talk about, okay, so we have blanch, steam, simmer, poach, infuse, emulsify, grind, sear, pan fry, deep fry, grill, roast, braise, rise, bake, fold, and set. I mean, you cover it all. You are a James Beard award-winning chef. When did you first get interested in cooking?
Well, I think, you know, it's funny what you were speaking about your mother. My mother was a great cook. I mean, we had... You know, they used to say that the average American family has 10 recipes. And, yeah. Well, my mother had more than 10. I mean, we had pork chops on Monday and meatloaf on Tuesday. But the cookie jar was always full. She baked pies and cakes and pizzas and breads. She was Italian origin. And I just grew up thinking I'd always have good food around me. It didn't occur to me that I shouldn't cook. I mean, I just assumed I would always cook. So, you know, I always joked that, you know, I ate before I wrote, so I guess I was a cook before I was a food writer.
I wish I grew up with you. I was always hungry. I mean, it was never anything good to eat.
We weren't hungry very often, no, truly. And all four of us kids, we eat very well.
That is so good. You know, in addition to all the different techniques, I love in the book how you write organize, and you have organization, neatness, cleanliness, and essential equipment. You write, keeping an organized, well-stocked kitchen does not mean that you have to have a million gadgets or spend a ton of money. It's really all about a state of mind. So talk to us about this state of mind, and what are really some of the essentials that we need to be able
to make some great stuff? Well, I think the most important, and this book was inspired by watching my students, and, you know, one of my rules is kind of not a joke, but I say, you know, keep everything neat for your neighbor because you're cooking next to someone else, and so clean up after yourself. And I think that a lot of people don't clean up after themselves, even if they're in their own kitchen. And, I mean, it's really just a simple sense of discipline. I mean, even myself, if I'm in the kitchen by myself, I have a rule that as soon as I finish one task, you know, I never keep a sink full of dirty dishes. Things get cleaned up. And it keeps you calmer in the kitchen, more organized, and your food will taste better because when your kitchen is a pig pen, you're nervous and you can't do a good job. It's that simple. So that costs nothing, right?
Exactly. Well, Patricia, you would love my husband because he gets on me. I mean, I am much less sloppy. I mean, I used to be a total slob, but now he's gotten to me and I like to keep things neat. But sometimes I'll cook on a Sunday and I'll have like three different things going at once. And so things start to stack up and he's like, "Hun, you got to clean as you go." And I'm like, "Well, I'm trying, but this, I don't want to burn this on." So I think it's good though, because when he's in the kitchen, it's nice. Like he made a wonderful meal last night. He took white fish and he sauteed onions and garlic and white wine. And he took some crushed tomatoes and put some other spices in it. And then he roasted some potatoes. And yet the kitchen was completely spotless.
Right.
So obviously it can be done.
It can be done. And, you know, look, I mean, I'm not saying that you can take a picture of my kitchen every second, because sometimes you do just flop over, you know? Yeah. But I think it should. It's a goal. It's a goal. We all have to have goals in life, and I think a clean kitchen, it's so simple. It's really important to the end result of your food, really, truly.
Oh, I think so, too. And what about, like, essentials? What are some essential ingredients we would find in your pantry and that you recommend other people have on stock?
Well, pantry, I mean, pantry including things, say, on your counter, but I mean, you know, a good olive oil, good sea salt, coarse sea salt, fine sea salt, good pepper grinder. In my refrigerator, I always have, you know, Parmesan cheese. They're just simple things that no matter what you're doing will just, you know, enhance your food. For sure. And, you know, one of the things, you know, again, going back to organization, you know, the French have an expression called mise en place, which means everything in its place. And it goes back to the organization. And mise en place means, for me anyway, say you've got your recipe, you take out all your ingredients, you weigh or measure them, your flour, your sugar, whatever you're doing, they're all on the tray together. You look and you count, okay, I have 7 ingredients in the recipe, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And having all of that together makes such a difference because, you know, if you're low on flour or you're low on sugar or you're low on, you don't have, the recipe calls for 3 eggs and you only have 2, that's a problem. But what it also helps you do is make your shopping list for the next time you go out the door. And those are things that tremendously help you as a cook. Really, they're so simple, but there's nothing worse than starting a recipe and finding you don't have all the ingredients. You got to get in your car and go to the store and whatever.
That's
annoying.
And it's a hassle. Yeah, my mom always taught me to make a list.
Right. I've got lists everywhere. Of course, I lose them or I go out the door without them, but that happens too.
Of course. You know what I like to do, and thank goodness with the phones, right, is all, like when I made your, I made the chicken stew with the chickpeas, and it was delicious. I just took a picture of the recipe from your book, so I didn't have to bring the book with me. Isn't that nice?
Exactly.
Oh, man, that's so convenient.
I do that. Thank goodness for phones like this. I mean, I do that all the time. All the time.
Yes.
So, I've got it right there.
And I love that recipe. Yes.
Thank you.
Now, before we jump into that, I want to mention some questions. Okay, so there's blanching and steaming. When do you blanch? When do you steam? And does it depend on, let's talk vegetables. Because I've always thought that steaming's better, but am I wrong? I mean, break this down for
us. No, it depends. For instance, okay, let's take, say, green beans.
Okay.
So blanching is bringing lots of heavily salted boiling water to the boil, putting in, say, the green beans in the water, boiling water. Do not put the lid on unless you want army drab gray color, because putting the lid on takes away chemical, actually, in the green beans or green vegetables that keeps the green. So you cook that until just tender. I like a little crisp, but not raw. And then in blanching, you take that out, you plunge it either in ice water. If you don't have ice, you just run lots of as cold water as you can over it to stop the cooking and to keep that nice green color. Now, if you did the same thing and steamed the green beans, you wouldn't get the same color, the same flavor, and so on. Now, take another vegetable, say as asparagus, which I like to braise, which means cooking them in a little bit of oil and liquid covered for a short time. I don't know, if you steamed asparagus, you wouldn't get that essence of the asparagus out of it, okay? Mm. Steaming, I love to steam fish. I think especially a white fish, codfish is the best. I steam it on a bed of rosemary. It's delicious, easy, fresh, healthy. What more can you ask? So you just think of the ingredient and what you want it to be, and also capturing the essence of the flavor of that ingredient. So you're not, you know, Joël Robuchon always used to say, our job as cooks is not to take not to try to make a mushroom taste like a carrot, but take a mushroom taste more like a mushroom than a can. So what we want to do is not just capture the flavor, but even enhance it if we can.
Oh, that's nice. Now, would you say the blanching process with green beans is, what, maybe a minute or shorter? Oh,
it depends on the size of your green beans. I mean, if you have tiny little baby haricot vert, 2 minutes. If you have big, fat, 3, 4, 5 minutes. But taste. That's the other thing. I'll say to my students, they'll present me with something. They'll say, what do you think? I'll say, did you taste it? And they'll say, no. I'll say, well, why are you giving it to me? But I think tasting as we go along is so important. So very important.
What is emulsify? I've heard of that, like a salad dressing. Is that what that is?
No. Okay, here's the two easiest explanations. So you make a vinaigrette. So you have vinegar or lemon juice. You have oil, salt, pepper, whatever. You shake it up, right? And you get this nice, thick emulsion. You let it sit there for a few minutes, and it separates, okay? So that's what's called a temporary emulsion. So you shake it up again, and it becomes an emulsion. But when you make a mayonnaise, eggs or egg yolks, oil, salt, maybe a little vinegar, maybe lemon juice, maybe mustard, and you turn that into an emulsion that stays for its life, an emulsion, if it's properly done, okay? So that's when the oil and the acid combine to create a solid mass, okay? So that's pretty simple.
Yes. I see. Okay, because I like to go through all the... You have so many great things in the book. And getting a good sear is very important. And for what types of recipes would you say on the meat that you want that good sear?
Well, definitely mostly for meats. And you want to get that crust. You know, it's an expression called the Maillard effect. And Dr. Maillard was a doctor in France in the 1890s or something, who created this idea of just creating this crust when you cook something. So when you're searing, you know, I think most of us, we want to keep playing with the food. Okay, so say you've got a steak in there. You've got it over fairly high heat. And you put it in, and you start to cook it. And then your impulse is to keep turning it. No. What you need to do is let it sit there, because it'll stick right away, okay? Right? It'll stick to the pan no matter what you're doing. Is to let it sit until what's called the Maillard effect clicks in, which means when it's nice and crispy and crusty, and it stops to stick, and then you turn it, and that's what creates that nice crustiness of anything that's seared.
Oh, that is so nice. All right. Now, Patricia, a lot of people are afraid of deep frying. They think it's not healthy. They say you shouldn't do it. But I think the occasional deep fry can be fun. Now, I have to admit, the only thing I've ever sort of deep fried is latkes on Hanukkah. And that's not even really deep frying, because I'll always just like kind of put them on top of the oil so they're kind of floating. But what do you like to deep fry, and what's the best way to do it?
Well, you know, it's interesting, and part of the reason I put that in also is that I see that my students, you know, they say, I don't deep fry, because we have this bad image of it being unhealthy. Well, if you deep fry at proper temperatures, you're really using almost no oil at all. In fact, probably less than you would use in searing or lots of other cooking techniques. But what I advise people to do, don't try to do it just top of the stove in a pot, in a thermometer. To me, that's hopeless. Hopeless, hopeless, hopeless. Just invest in a tiny little, like $79 baby fryer that takes about a quart of oil. And that's what I use. I have larger ones when I'm doing classes. But for the two of us, I just use this little baby fry thing. And one of the things I love to do are oysters, our pan-fried oysters, coated oysters with a little polenta and Parmesan crust. They're absolutely delicious. I also like to do squid, little squid rings or baby squid with it. You can do lots of vegetables. You can do artichoke bottoms. It's just a wonderful, wonderful, flavorful, and everybody loves it. Everybody loves it. And it doesn't take time or money. It's just another cooking technique that we should all add, you know, to our repertoire. But there's also in the book, one of my favorite recipes in the whole book are what I call cold fry frites, where you don't need a fryer. You just take French fries, potatoes cut in a French fry mode. You put them in room temperature oil. You bring the heat up and cook them. You must try this recipe. You must.
Oh, and I'm excited.
And within about, I think it's 17 or 18 minutes, you have the most incredible French fries you've ever tasted in your life. They're not greasy. You don't use very much.
Wow.
It's a magical recipe. Robuchon has been given credit for it. I don't know who really invented it. But I've tried it with other vegetables, and it doesn't work. It seems to only work with potatoes, but that's not so bad either.
You know, it's so funny you brought that up, because I was looking at that one. I'm thinking, I've got to make that.
And what's great, you can make it in the recipe. I mean, we've had to test it dozens of times, unfortunately. But, I mean, I have recipes for making it for 2 people, for 4 people, for 6 people, for 8 people, for 12 people, and the size of the pan you should use, the amount of oil you can use, and it's magic. It's truly magic.
Oh, you know, I'm looking at all the recipes in this book, and they all look magic to me. What are some of your favorites?
Oh, what do we do over and over again? I mean, I love all of the fish recipes. I love the monkfish. I use the same breading in the monkfish as I do with the oysters, of a combination where you just put in, you know, a whipped an egg, a cracked egg, and then a mixture of Parmesan and polenta and maybe a little spicy pepper. And it's a quick pan fry recipe. We make that almost every week in our classes and often at home. You don't have to use monkfish. You can use almost any white fish. I think you could probably even use vegetables in it, although I've never really tried that. The roasted, the chicken that's where you slit it in the back and just grill it on a grill is fabulous. We do that a lot. The desserts, you know, the other thing, baking. Students yes. walk into the house and they look me straight in the eye the first day and they say, I just want to tell you one thing. I don't bake. And it's funny, people have a fear of baking the same way they have a fear of frying. And I think baking, you know, means you have to measure correctly. You have to be very specific. Make sure your oven's good. And, you know, ovens are a pain because they're never the same from one oven to the next. And they're, you know, they can be kind of all over the place. But I have several baking recipes that I adore. There's the almond and ginger square that I love. I could make it every day. And the idea of that one, because it's called My Master Recipes, is that once you've made that dessert, you can make 4 or 5 different variations. For instance, you can make it with cranberries. You could make it with cocoa powder. You can do all sorts of variations on that. And so with that one recipe, you actually have 5. Or also in baking, and I have some quick breads, because, again, people are kind of afraid of using yeast. This doesn't require yeast, just baking powder. And you can make these delicious quick breads. You can make one that's jalapeno and polenta and corn, fresh corn, which is fabulous. You can do 4 or 5 different variations on that, walnut and cheddar. So you've got the basis. You have the pan to cook it in. You know what temperature it should be cooked at in your oven, and you're home free after that.
You know, speaking of pans, what do you recommend for frying, for baking? You know, what kind of, do we want iron skillets? I mean, what do we want to use?
Well, the one thing for baking, I really do like, you know, nonstick pans. And there's so, you know, we've made so much advancement in all of those utensils in the kitchen. So I think mostly nonstick of anything is good. For pans, it really depends on what I'm doing. I love copper. I mean, I have lots and lots of copper, partly because I like things that will live longer than I will. But if it's also expensive. So if you can't afford copper, you know, even inexpensive nonstick pans do very well. Obviously, cast iron pans are great. They heat up very well. They're easy to keep clean. They're just universally loved. So there's no problem there. I think you don't have to spend a fortune on any of these things. Mm. For even knives, just three good knives in your kitchen are fine. I mean, I have probably 3,000, but you don't need a lot. I think a kitchen scale is very important. I think you should weigh things a lot rather than measuring, cause especially when you're baking, because it's much more precise. You know, one of my favorite kitchens ever was when I was in graduate school in Madison, Wisconsin, and I could stand in the middle of the kitchen and reach everything. And it was probably one of the most efficient kitchens I've ever worked in. Of course, those were the days before we probably had no electrical appliances, no food processor, probably didn't even have a toaster. But the kitchen was extremely efficient. I made all my own breads and so on and so forth. So you can do a lot in a little space, though big space.
Patricia, you are so fantastic. I am just loving this book. I think you are so incredible. Tell us all the ways we can learn more about you and your fantastic book, My Master Recipes, 165 Recipes to Inspire Confidence in the Kitchen.
Well, the book, you can find it online in all the online sources, bookstores. You can check out my website, patriciawells.com, and just look out there.
Well, I just think you're so fantastic, and I can't wait to emulsify, sear, and poach, and blanch, and all the other great stuff. You'll have to come back to Fruity Friday sometime, because there's still so much more to talk about. But in the meantime, thank you so much, Patricia. I want to thank everyone for listening for Talk Healthy today. Please go on to iTunes. You can subscribe. You can also subscribe by going to RadioMD.com. If you rate and review, it really helps get the show out there to more folks. And we want to have everybody cooking wonderful food, being healthy, and being happy. So thanks so much for listening, and stay well.